ARUP Institute for Learning presents Insight,
Education,
Leader,
Pain Management,
Technology,
Experiment,
Esoteric,
Informatics,
Body Research,
Laboratory Medicine.
Join us as we delve into emerging topics presented by ARUP medical directors who are faculty in the Department of Pathology, School of Medicine, and other highly qualified expert contributors. In the last segment, Dr. Adler and Dr. Witt introduced themselves and Rose testing. In this segment, they go further in their discussion by introducing the FIX method and compare it to the Rose method.
So I think a lot of places around the country, especially smaller places or places in the community that don't have access to cytologists, are using fixed approaches, whereas bigger institutions or more integrated institutions are using Rose because of the potential advantages. Let's define what we're really talking about here. We're talking about rapid on-site evaluation of EUS FNA samples. And a lot of places, you know, don't have Rose or rapid on-site evaluation, and they have to resort to other approaches. So for example, during my endoscopic ultrasound fellowship training, if we were lucky, we would get a cytotech, but most of the time we didn't get a cytotech to come to the procedure. And what we would typically do is we would adopt what we call here a fixed approach, which basically means we have no pathology interpretation. So we're essentially identifying the target lesion and taking samples and then not doing any analysis on them at the time. It's called a fixed approach because you usually take a fixed number of passes and stop.
Yeah, I get a lot of outside cytology consultations where they are using the fixed method. And usually that entails putting everything into a needle rinse and doing some form of either cytospin or a thin preparation, which is an alcohol fixed slide. And you can make diagnoses that way, but they're much more difficult. And I think the cytologic criteria are a bit less reliable when you don't have nice smears that you're able to stain with your own stains that you're used to interpreting. I think because it makes me more comfortable and able to render diagnoses, it seems like it's better patient care.
You know, I've practiced in the East, the Midwest, the South, and now I'm here in the Mountain West. And, you know, one of the biggest differences about practicing here is our catchment area is enormous. You know, I was a medical student in New York, and if somebody came from 2 miles away in New York City, they passed 4 hospitals in that 2 miles. You know, here our catchment area is Utah, Idaho, Wyoming, Montana, the Dakotas, parts of Nevada, and parts of Colorado. So people are driving sometimes 300, 400, 500 miles for a procedure. And there's a lot of pressure to get everything done in one shot. Because, for example, if I was using a fixed approach and I didn't get a diagnosis, maybe I was in the wrong part of the lesion, or I was just getting necrosis, it's very frustrating for that person to have to get a call a week later saying we didn't get it and get in their car and drive or fly 500 miles again, you know, from Rapid City, South Dakota, back here. So I think Rose lets us try to compact their visit and get as much done in one shot as we can.
I feel like our FNA service on the whole is able to be successful because we perform on-site evaluations on so many of our cases. And because cytology is a bit of an abstraction from having a formal piece of tissue and a formal excisional biopsy, you're reliant on the clinical and radiologic impression. And I look a lot of times to Doug to help explain to me why I'm seeing what I am on the slide. I can think of cases where I've walked in and I look at my first slide and I see what looks like unremarkable pancreas. And then I go in and I ask Dr. Adler, or I say, I think you missed it because it's just normal pancreas. And he says, well, I'm actually in a submucosal gastric mass. And then together we put together, oh, this is pancreatic heterotopia. It explains everything. And then he's done. But if there were no communication, who knows how many passes you would do.
Right. Well, and the other thing, too, is, you know, I mean, there's a role to experience and doing both ends. And for example, you know, I mean, I don't know how many EUSs I've done. I mean, I'm not exaggerating. The number is in the thousands and could easily be above 10,000. Like, that's, I'm not making that number up. But you can tell the difference between a primary pancreatic tumor or a metastasis. Like, they just look different, whereas on a CT, they're just going to show up as a mass. I can often say to Ben, like, gee, this looks suspicious for a met, even if the patient doesn't have a history of prior cancer, which is going to affect the stains he's going to use or his whole evaluation of the tissue. And again, I'm not trying to bias Ben. He may think sometimes I am. So I'm giving him my clinical impression and my endoscopic impression, which is different than his pathologic impression, but it plays a role in the patient's, you know, evaluation and care, meaning I'm much less likely to biopsy something I think is benign, whereas if I put a needle into something and by the risk of it, I think that there's more meat on that bone.
It's very true that depending on the impression I get from Doug, it changes how I look at a case. For instance, if he tells me this is concerning for a metastatic, for instance, renal cell carcinoma, if he tells me that, I'm going to look at a bit of a higher power to try to find those renal cell carcinomas that are typically interspersed with unremarkable pancreas. If I feel like I'm not seeing the right things and I think I'm going to need special study support, allows me an opportunity to do that while the patient is there during one procedure.
And remember too, you know, I mean, some of the cases are black and white, meaning somebody has a big mass in their pancreas and the CT shows innumerable liver metastases, and we're basically just looking for confirmation of what we know. The patient has pancreatic cancer, and, you know, literally the minute that Ben tells us you got it, like, the scope is pulled out and the patient is awakened. Other times it's trickier if it's, for example, not such a clear diagnosis, like maybe it's neuroendocrine, you know, maybe the pathologist gets what they need to make a diagnosis of malignancy, but they want extra passes for special stains. Sometimes if it's lymphoma, you know, they'll need additional samples for flow. So they'll say, you know, again, the black and white cases is you got malignancy and we're done. The less clear case is, hey, you're definitely in the lesion, you know, let's get two or three more passes. And, you know, those passes, maybe we won't wait for an analysis because we already know we're in the target and we're just collecting for flow cytometry or special stains. So, I mean, that, you know, that's a whole other layer to it. Again, sometimes your goal is different depending on the clinical situation. And sometimes, too, it's counterintuitive where to go to get the sample. You know, your brain would tell you when you see a 3-centimeter pancreatic lesion, you want to put your needle right into the middle of it, which is sort of the way it looks nice on the image, and it conveys to anybody who's watching, hey, I'm definitely in the lesion. But in the center, for example, of a 3-centimeter tumor, we might just be getting necrosis or blood because the neovascularization of the tumor in the center is poor. Whereas, you know, Ben may be able to tell us, hey, you know, that pass you took from the periphery of the tumor, which is maybe a technically harder stick to do, is a higher yield. So if the first two passes from the center that look great in our photos might actually be worthless in the less glamorous, harder to do shot that looks less intuitive on the images may actually be the one that yields more valid material for analysis.
I want things to make sense on both sides. And a lot of times that does happen. I can confirm what he's thinking and he can confirm what I'm thinking. And I think from a patient's standpoint, that's what you want. You want people to unite clinically and pathologically on a common diagnosis. But also, I think the other reason rapid onsite is valuable is because when things don't make sense and they don't link up, a lot of times you can converse about it and decide then how to handle some more specimen in order to potentially make everything tie together.
I mean, I just think that when we take this approach, it definitely gives, I think, Ben more confidence that he's getting good information and me more confidence that the diagnosis he's giving me is on the money.
On the next segment.
But I mean, I think just to flip it over, I mean, again, I'm a cheerleader for this idea, but I don't want to oversell it. And for example, I don't want people listening to this who are at places doing a fixed approach to feel like we're saying what they're doing is wrong or bad.